Oh, it sure is, and it's going to be a manic Monday without Scoot. He couldn't join us today. I'm Dave Cohen, filling in. Glad to be with you as we kick off what we hope is another wonderful week here in Southeast Louisiana. And we know we got at least 3 great days of weather coming up, and that is a good thing. We've got a great 3 hours for you ahead today. I love my family and absolutely want to make my loved ones' lives the best they can be. And I do like to make money, as I'm sure most people do. But how far are you willing to go to get more money? Will you endanger the safety, homes, and potentially the lives of others so you can have a better life? Sadly, it appears some people are just that greedy and do not care about others' well-being. I am not, but last year, the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Orleans said that a man named James Mohammed, who worked for the city of Kenner and worked for a local inspection company, quote, jeopardized the safety of countless homeowners. That came amid reports that Mohammed was working for Randy Farrell and flat out lied about inspecting homes and businesses. Countless, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. And even inspected his own work, a clear conflict with no check or balance. Now the feds say that Farrell used his status as a third-party inspector at IECI to orchestrate a years-long scheme in which he accepted bribes to let unlicensed electricians work on hundreds of New Orleans homes, using licensed electricians' names and permits fraudulently. And then Farrell and IECI, the feds say, fraudulently passed the inspections of the unlicensed electricians' work. Farrell also conspired, according to the feds, with others, to offer bribes to public officials to thwart the investigations into his scheme, including having a City of New Orleans employee fired allegedly after bribing New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell. So how do we know if what the feds call our countless homes and buildings around here safe? Or could they suffer electrical or other failures? Coming up, I'm going to talk to the New Orleans Inspector General, Ed Michel, about the importance of licensed professionals doing work that is actually inspected by qualified inspectors. That's coming up next hour here on The Scoot Show. We'll also check in on the tropics and see what the chances are of us seeing anything develop in the Gulf this week. Plus, Gallup says for the first time ever, more Americans report they're Republicans, not Democrats. First time in our nation's history. What has led to the change, and what does it mean going forward? That's all coming up here on The Scoot Show. But first, we're going to lighten things up a little bit and talk about TV. Sing along. It was 64 years ago today that the Flintstones became network television's first animated primetime series as it debuted on ABC, a primetime cartoon that became a massive hit and in many ways set the stage for more adventurous and different types of television programming. I want to talk about your favorite TV shows of all time. Maybe your favorite TV show theme songs, because, well, that's not a bad one, right? And we'll also talk about what is your favorite show to watch right now. What's on TV now that has you excited, and what recommendations can you make for something great for others to watch? So that's all coming up here over the next 3 hours on The Scoot Show. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Scoot. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get the man who actually wrote the book on Hanna-Barbera and how it changed television, and talk about the future of TV and the past of television here on The Scoot Show. But I also want to hear from you on the other topics I've set out on the buffet, and we'll be bringing it all to you over the next 3 hours here on WWE. Coleman with the remix that the B-52s did of the Flintstones theme. I like it. Bring it up. Yeah, it was 64 years ago today that the Flintstones made history as the first ever primetime animated show on network television. And that was significant and has led to a lot of change since then. Jared Bahir-Brausch is an assistant teaching professor and author of Hanna-Barbera, A History, and we're lucky enough to have him join us on this Flintstones anniversary. Professor, thanks for joining us here on WWL.
Yeah, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
What made you write a book all about Hanna-Barbera and their amazing accomplishments, not only with the Flintstones, but of course with so many other hugely popular animated programs from the Jetsons to Tom and Jerry, Top Cat, and so many more?
I mean, along with my own fandom, it was looking at the kind of not just the academic environment, but the general kind of publication environment, and realized there wasn't a larger history, and they produced more content and were watched for more hours by generations of kids and kids at heart between the late 50s and early 90s. And so I felt like it deserved the attention, especially as we can still compare and make jokes about the Flintstones and look at the future and make jokes about the Jetsons and wonder where our flying cars are. And so
I thought it was in our briefcase. Yes,
exactly. Exactly. And so but also knowing that the influence it had on the larger animation industry and leading to the development of what my access point was for these shows, which was Cartoon Network and their programming being the foundation of the formation of the network after Ted Turner obtained the rights to all their productions.
Yeah, you know, so many of us remember actually watching Saturday morning cartoons when that was when kids of my generation were able to see cartoons on any regular basis before cable TV, before the Cartoon Network and things like that. But generations before us actually did see primetime programming, you know, 64 years ago with the Flintstones, which to many people was a lot like The Honeymooners or other sitcoms of a previous era. But that really was historic, wasn't it, when Hanna-Barbera were able to get animated programming on in prime time on network television?
It was. And when you look at their history in television, the Huckleberry Hound show, Quick Draw, they aired in prime time, but they're in syndication, and so they weren't available nationally, that certain networks would pick them up, others would take a pass, where the Flintstones was regularly scheduled on ABC at 8:30 at night. And so they wanted to make it clear that this was an adult sitcom. And obviously, as many of their shows did, it took its template from The Honeymooners, but advanced those plot lines and looked at really the post-war boom in suburbanization, in consumerism, and really reflected its time, even though it's set in quote-unquote prehistoric days, although
modern Stone Age family, yes.
Exactly, exactly. That I wouldn't have any kids watch it as if it's a documentary and then report on it back at school, but the incredible use of kind of these prehistoric images to present the modern experience of Americans at the time.
Yeah, and it really did tackle some pretty big issues, particularly for that point in our nation's history. It dealt with things like relationship with your boss. It dealt with things like in-laws. It dealt with, to some extent, couples and relationships and families and children. And it did it all in what was a comedic way and obviously a cartoonish way because it was animated, but it seemed to, like other primetime programs of the time, start pushing the envelope a little bit and exploring what weren't just clear-cut, you know, happy American images.
Exactly. And I mean, there's an episode where Barney is on a bridge with rocks tied to his legs, and Fred has to talk him down. Being one of the first shows to show a couple in the same bed and being one of the first shows to show the full experience of pregnancy and also adoption as well, seen in the fourth season, Bam Bam was adopted by the Rubbles. And so, as you said, animation allowed for a little bit more flexibility in presenting and often satirically or through comedic form, these really serious aspects of American life coming out of World War II and coming out of within within the baby boom as well.
So do you think that it really did lay the groundwork for more progressive kinds of programming on television? If the American public and the networks are willing to accept, oh my goodness, a man and woman in the same bed together, which previously you never saw on network or probably anywhere else on television, if they were able to accept confronting issues like suicide and adoption and these other really kind of weighty, important issues that it took on, was it laying the way for other programs to then branch out and start looking at life in more realistic terms and not these, you know, these happy, always everything wonderful, even if something bad happens, it's always wrapped up in 30 minutes kind of way?
It did. And I think, too, doing it through a sitcom format helps kind of make the audience more comfortable with these aspects and kind of can find a balance through the serious nature of what they're addressing while also kind of lightening the mood and not kind of overwhelming the audience with these serious issues. And so there was hesitancy, especially in comedies, to fully kind of dive into these issues, which later, when you look at many shows later in the 60s and the 70s, like Mary Tyler Moore, like Maude, like the set of Norman Lear shows that would come later, it helped kind of create a template where you can use the situational comedy to also address more serious issues in people's lives, because that's how life is, that it's not all comedy, it's not all drama, there's a mix of both. And I think the Flintstones, especially in those first two seasons before they shifted into more of a family sitcom, did a great job of balancing both while using the animation to lighten the mood a little bit.
You know, it's funny what you were talking. I was thinking about shows like The Jeffersons in the 70s that confronted, you know, real deep race relations issues, but always was a comedy. It was a sitcom. And I wonder now if the Flintstones didn't kind of lay the way for that to be able to happen on that and other shows of that era.
Yeah, and I think, again, on multiple levels, doing it as an animated show as well. And it's interesting looking back because theatrical series like the Looney Tunes were meant for a general audience. And when you look at the first two seasons of the Flintstone, it was truly meant for an adult audience. Being able to not only confront those issues, but also empower future creators of shows to, again, kind of use that comedy, but also kind of there's a vulnerability when you're able to make people laugh and there's a comfort and trust, and to leverage that trust into opening the eyes of audiences. I mean, another clear example is All in the Family, where you're able to kind of leverage, much like Jackie Gleason in The Honeymooners, and then later his animated counterpart in Fred Flintstone, they're able to kind of make this gruff, otherwise not always lovable character into something the audience truly loved. And so you see some of those other future series that are deeply satirical while also kind of embracing and even deeper than the Flintstones and embracing this almost anti-hero to present these issues. I think the Flintstones don't get enough credit for doing that.
Yeah, without Fred Flintstone, would there have been an Archie Bunker? Without Fred Flintstone, would there have been a Fred Sanford? You know, and would these characters have been able to break that kind of boundary and become what you just talked about if you didn't have a cartoonish Fred Flintstone do it first?
Exactly. And I think, too, because of the Flintstones' history and the fact that the fall after the series ended on ABC, they were already on Saturday morning television, also prepared a generation of kids who would later be adults when those other series would emerge to appreciate that approach to sitcom and approach to humor. And so I think there was almost not necessarily planned, but there was almost a training element where it better equipped young audiences to understand satire and to embrace that more intricate form of comedy that is more rooted in real life versus some of the other series at the time, like Leave It to Beaver, that was more kind of idealistic in its view of the American experience.
Did other Hanna-Barbera programs, you think, play any role in this? Whether it was Tom and Jerry or the Jetsons or any of their other programs, were they also trying to push the envelope with those shows?
Tom and Jerry, they kind of are very much, and I mean, they're extremely influential. We wouldn't have Wile E. Coyote if it wasn't for Tom and Jerry. And Tom and Jerry was not immune to what was going on at the time. There's a series of patriotic films that came out, and being the tying Disney for the most awarded short series ever, the influence was there in terms of, and also, I mean, realizing it was a series that had zero dialogue. And so to present this cat and mouse kind of game within the series was influential, and also kind of allowed them to kind of test the boundaries of general audience animation that was more adult. It was a little more violent, as was Looney Tunes as well. As you mentioned, it was the Jetsons that even took some of that further. Now, the Jetsons only ran for one season in the 60s. It was the first series on ABC to be produced or to air in color. The Flintstones was produced in color since its beginning, but ABC was not broadcasting in color yet, but it prepared them to make the move to syndication. But the Jetsons really leaning into that consumerism, that economic growth in America, and even looking forward and kind of saying this will continue, but there is a level of satire in how consumed people's lives were in that kind of keeping up with the Joneses mentality. And so the Jetsons is another example of that, but using the future to look at kind of how this is going to inundate our lives, and knowing that George only works a few hours a week. And this idealized, like,
not
oh, in
Mr.
the future,
Space's liking, but yes,
yeah, and this future where everything's going to be so automated, we're still going to make white collar, white collar wages, even though we're only working a few hours a week. That hasn't quite come to fruition, but it is interesting. A couple years ago was kind of quote unquote George Jetson's birthday, because he's 40 in the series, and so he was technically born in the end of July in 2022.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting now also to look and being like, we're all kind of getting much closer to that Jetson's reality. Yes, we're inundated with devices and products, but our lives are not quite as easy as Hanna-Barbera thought they would be moving into the future.
We still don't have flying cars, still don't have moving sidewalks everywhere. But I got to tell you, particularly during the pandemic with the outrageous increase in video conferencing, you remember the Jetsons didn't have phones. They always talked on video to whoever they were calling. And I remember as a child always thinking, man, that would be the day when, you talk to your friends on the TV and you talk to, you know, everybody, you call your parents on the TV. And now I'm not sure I love it. I still like just having the audio and not always the video to go along with it. So.
No. And you see Mr. Spacely pop on the television without him kind of even turning anything on. And we're like, oh, we'll still have some separation. And then during the pandemic, everyone got that either email or instantaneous call through Zoom or through Teams. And they're just like, okay, these parts of the future are apparently coming true, where I still have to drive on a road because the flying cars haven't come to fruition. Like, I thought there would be a little more balance to that experience in the future.
Yeah, I think the problem with the flying cars is us. I think the technology exists, but can you imagine? People can't stay on the road without crashing into each other in technically, you know, on a level surface. Imagine if we had to worry about up and down as well as side to side. Air traffic control issues would be, I think, the real thing. And that's probably what's keeping us from having personal flying cars at this point. So.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for that because, again, even driving to work earlier today, people are on their cell phones and things like that. And so I'm like, if we can't stay on this kind of static, stable road in the air, and also kind of with Boeing is dealing with, we don't need people throwing trash out their windows and pieces of cars falling on us. And so that is one kind of area in terms of safety that maybe we want to continue to delay a little bit, considering people's difficulty in keeping their attention on what they're doing.
We're talking with assistant teaching professor Jared Baihir-Brausch, about the 64th anniversary of the Flintstones making its debut on network television. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want your calls and texts at 504-260-1870. Do you think that Hanna-Barbera, through the Flintstones, and as we just talked about the Jetsons and other programs, were really responsible for the evolution of television as we know it now, and really did kind of shatter the glass, as it were, in opening us up to thinking about television differently and not having it be this pristine, clean, wonderful place where things were always wonderful and great? As I listen to the professor, I think I'm learning a whole lot that I didn't even realize about the influence of the Flintstones and the other Hanna-Barbera programming. I want to know your thoughts. What are your favorite Hanna-Barbera shows? And what shows do you love now that you think maybe we wouldn't have if they hadn't broken through like they did? 504-260-1870. Call me and text me now on the Equinert Jewelers Talk and Text Line. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Scoot. Scoot will be back soon, but I'm with you today here on WWL. All right, folks are texting us that they love the Jetsons, Johnny Quest, Magilla Gorilla. It's on this date 64 years ago that the Flintstones debuted as the first ever animated program on network television. We're lucky enough to have the author of Hanna-Barbera History joining us, assistant teaching professor Jared Baihir-Brausch. Thank you for joining us, professor. I was surprised when I heard you say the Jetsons was only on one season.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of toward the end where the Flintstones had shifted its priorities, and then Pebbles were born and it became a family series. And so the Jetsons was just on in the 1962-1963 season, and those episodes just ran over and over. And then later it was rebooted, and it's interesting to kind of consider that term now. We're so used to it, but it was rebooted in 1985. For another two seasons. And so there's a 23-year gap between its first season and what is considered the second and third season. But the second and third season is very different, whereas the first season's more about kind of consumerism. The second and third season's more about kind of the computer revolution and the technology that was coming in that period.
And we should note that back then, seasons had many more episodes. I guess there are like 75 episodes in total of the Jetsons. Plus, it was the movie that many people who were kids, I guess, in the 90s would remember.
Exactly. And that movie is kind of meant to be the series finale. When you're looking at these series, too, I mean, They're 26, 27 episodes versus what we're used to now, where some series a season is six episodes. And so we were dealing with a much different environment. And honestly, Hanna-Barbera, as much as I love their comedy and writing, was very focused on quantity over quality of animation. And due to the cost of animation, there was obviously a large gap in broadcast prime time between animated series and prime time.
Yeah, no doubt. But television today took a lot of notes, I guess, from these shows of the past. I was not born to see the Flintstones on primetime television, but as a child, it was on, I guess, on Saturday mornings on local television in the afternoons, and much like the Jetsons, too. We talk about these shows, and you and I know all the characters and everything about them, but they were on long before we were born.
Yeah, and that's what makes animation so influential, that it doesn't have the same expiration date as some live action series. And also, too, what helps kind of boost the kind of profile of these shows, as you mentioned, kids watch these series over and over again. And it's one of the things Disney would really leverage in the 80s around home video, the fact that kids like the comfort. And honestly, we all do, as I binge the series like The Office for the umpteenth time, and The Simpsons as well. I probably have seen that series through at least a dozen times, is that kids like the comfort of familiar characters and familiar jokes. And so that also added to the influence of these Saturday morning television shows that were repeated over and over. And in series like The Jetsons and Flintstones appeared on all three networks, or all three major networks, throughout their runs, as each network would pick it up to fill in gaps in their schedule, with really Hanna-Barbera fully dominating the Saturday morning and Sunday morning schedule by the late 60s.
Yeah, and the one thing, of course, animation has going for it is, while you have voice actors, it's a lot easier to change them out if there's a contract dispute or something like that than it is an actual actor who appears on camera. Plus, cartoon characters, if they don't want them to, never age. I mean, Bart Simpson's been, what, 8 years old now for 30-some-odd years?
Exactly. And I mean, Disney famously said it, that I've never had to negotiate a contract with Mickey Mouse. I never had to worry about him walking off set. And so there is a level of control. And audiences kind of recognize there's a voice change for a short amount of time, but they're still drawn to the series itself. And another thing that keeps these series going is the merchandising, is the intellectual property, that we still see Flintstone t-shirts, we still see figures. They're in the process, Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, of making another Flintstones movie. And so the IP for these series not only kind of maintains the characters, but also leads people to look back at the source material and continue watching it over time. And parents love handing down those childhood experiences to their own children, which, again, maintains their relevance across generations.
Professor Brawish, I really, really appreciate you joining us here on WWL. Is there anything else I didn't ask you about on the 64th anniversary of the debut of The Flintstones as the first ever animated network television show that you wanted to address?
I think it's always interesting to kind of look at that early Flintstones. We remember it as a family sitcom, but how adult it was. I mean, the fact that Winston Cigarettes, and you can look at it YouTube, these commercials where Barney and Fred are smoking cigarettes, and kind of what is seen now as antiquated gender roles within that. But when you're able to kind of take those aspects with a grain of salt, it's just really amazing series and really amazing how it held up. And so, in its legacy, like Flintstone Vitamins were not created until the series was on Saturday morning. And so this kind of
and are still available, right?
Product. Exactly. Yeah, as gummies, as a number of other sources of vitamins. And so the legacy remains in the Flintstones, and I think it showed the value of animation. You didn't have to be creating multi-million-dollar productions like Disney. It's about the familiarity and the comfort with the characters, and I think Hanna-Barbera was big in creating that, and would lead to kind of the animation environment we know today.
And Fred and Barney are still fighting over those Cocoa Pebbles and those Fruity Pebbles, even on television to this day. So the staying power is still with us. Professor, if someone wants to read more from you, get your book, how do they do that?
It's on Amazon. It's produced by McFarland, so it's available on their website. But any online and many in-person booksellers will have it available.
Hanna-Barbera, A History. Thank you, Professor Brausch. We really appreciate you joining us. Have a great day, and go see if you can't find a flying car.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Someone texted us and said, don't forget about Bing, Bing, Bing. Ricochet Rabbit. Yeah, so many characters from our childhood that, you know, really were, by the time most of us now saw them, many, many years old, but still were fresh and new to us because of the magic of animation. More of your texts and calls at 504-260-1870 coming up next. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Scoot here on WWL, and I'm going to talk more about what our next hour's topic is, about the dangerous greed. How do we know our homes and offices are safe in and around New Orleans after these latest developments from the feds? That's up next here on WWL. Yeah, I want money too, and I really like money. But all this we're hearing about the greed for money that has now left what the feds say are countless homeowners in and around New Orleans in a very dangerous predicament. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk about that greed and the danger it's putting in what the feds say are countless numbers of people in the New Orleans area. We'll break down the scheme the Justice Department says had unlicensed contractors working on homes and buildings around the region, and then fraudulent inspections signing off on the unlicensed work. The New Orleans Inspector General joins us next hour to talk about how do we know if our homes and businesses are safe now that this is the second time in the last 2 years we've had a huge indictment of alleged fraudulent contractor activity with unlicensed workers and uninspected properties, all in the name of greed. Then in the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to talk more about Republicans and Democrats. For the first time ever, more Americans say they're Republicans than say they're Democrats. That's according to new analysis by Gallup. We'll find out why that is and what it means. And I welcome you to join the conversation on both those topics on the Oakwinhart Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. Call me or text me now, and we'll be happy to have you jump in the conversation. We're also going to get you an update on the tropics. I thought it important, with everything I'm seeing on social media and online, and I got an email alert today claiming that there's a high probability of tropical formation in the Gulf of Mexico, when that's not what the National Hurricane Center is saying over the next 7 days. Why is some alleged meteorologist sending out an e-blast to my inbox trying to scare me when it's not what the officials are saying? How do I know what's real and what's not? So we'll talk about that as well here on The Scoot Show. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Scoot. Glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. I know a lot of us are still licking our wounds from yesterday's Saints loss in that last second field goal in Atlanta. It was not easy to take, but let's hope that since the Saints got till Monday to get healthy, that we'll see some key players back in key roles and maybe things will be different in Kansas City. They really were banged up, and that's hard this early in the season. Getting lots of texts asking about Scoot. Don't worry, Scoot will be back soon. I'll be back.